session number 19023, Reel 3.
Leslie Palmer, Reel 3.
Yeah. We were stationed just below Tower Mina, and I was looking out to sea one day, and I said, hey, look, there's a couple of liners there. And there was, alongside of them was a big monitor as well with twin guns on, you know. She was in front, and there was other warships with it. And I said, I'll bet they're sending us home. And everybody said, ah, we've heard it all before. And we were. We left all our transports. We took all necessary equipment that we needed. And we boarded this ship, and it was the Otranto. Now, this one had been converted to a troop ship. And we were given a sort of part of a closed-in deck, really. We slept in hammocks, which were rolled up and put away. And we went for our food, which was brought in dicks, big dixes, and served in the area we slept in. Wasn't a bad ship, but it wasn't as comfortable as the Bedford. And we came back. I came home, and our unit went down to Suffolk. And I rejoined my unit there after a break, and lo and behold, I got pneumonia again. Put me in hospital, and at Bury St Edmunds, I think it was. And eventually, when I got better, they sent me to Ely to recuperate, which went pretty well. And then they sent me down to, would it be Gillingham, on the Thames, one of these build-up camps. And we were in bell tents. And one night, I was at a dance, and we just heard that we'd landed in France, and I was at this dance, and I went in back to bed, and about 2 o'clock in the morning, light shone on me, and a voice said, "Do they call you Palmer?" So I said, "Yes." He said, "Get up, you're moving." I said, "You're joking." He said, "No, you're moving. There's a few of you going." And he gave me a rifle covered in grease, a bandolier of ammunition. I packed all my stuff, and I had a kit bag with me civilian stuff in, which I took with me. We got on this train, and I fell fast asleep. We woke up at a small station, which would be, I don't know, about 6 o'clock in the morning, and on the station were all these ATS and troops and whatnot, and there was toilets, and they were serving breakfast. You took your billy can with you, and you got your breakfast and tea and whatnot, and toilets were there if you needed them. And we got back on this train, and 8 of us in this coach were just chatting, and we all seemed to be from 50 div one way or another. And I thought I'd better clean this rifle. So I cleaned the rifle up and whatnot, and dozed off again, and the next minute we pull into Southampton. And they put us onto one of these small transport boats, and it took us out to a LCI, and it was a American one. And it's the first time I'd seen the Americans with the big steel helmets they used to wear. Because I remember when we climbed up onto the deck, in front of me was this anti-aircraft gun with an American sitting behind it, smoking away like mad. And also in front of me was a fusilier sergeant major, who was one of the worst people I'd ever seen. "What the hell do you lot want?" when we got up on the deck. And to be honest, we said, "We don't know." And we didn't know. Nobody told us what we wanted or where we were going or anything, but we imagined we were going over. And Oh, he wanted it all happy, and he was ranting and raving, and one of the lads turned round to him, he says, have you done this before? So he says, what do you mean? He said, have you done any of this before landing? He says, no. He says, well, we have. He says, you lot get to the back and you follow me off the ship. So they stuck us at the back of the ship. And this was funny when we pulled in, pulled onto the beach, and they all shot off the boat and we're still on it. So we walked leisurely, to be honestly, down the gangplanks, you know, and there was a bit of shelling going on, and I lost my footing and I lost my kit bag. But I got back down on the beach, and right in front of me, believe it or not, was the beach master. Do you remember seeing the film with it, with him there, with his dog? Well, there he was, right in front of me. And I ran up to him and I said, can you tell me how I get to 50, Div? He said, you'll never make it. He said, they're over there, but he said, Jerry's broken through there. He said, your best bet's to go and get dug in that field up there. And we got dug in this field, and that's all there was. There would be about a dozen, maybe a few more up there, with nothing to eat and that. So we went back on the beach, and we found these care rations, you know, in the boxes and whatnot. And we took those, and anything we found useful, like a tarpaulin and all this, we took all these up with us. And we lived very well for a few days.
Which beach was this?
It was at Ooterard, near, is it Ooterard? Is it Sword?
Probably.
And we lived there for a few days. Nobody bothered us. You know, the shells were going over the top. They were going that way as well. And on the beach, it was very active. You could see them, you know, all unloading and whatnot. And then one day, this car pulled in, and it was a Humber shooting brake, and he had another car with him, a smaller one, an Austin, and he asked for the drivers, and there was, as I say, there was only just over a dozen of us, and there was only four drivers there, and he looked at me, because I had my ribbon then, for the 8th Army ribbon, and he said, have you just got back from there? So I said, yes. He said, have you ever driven one of these before? I said, yeah. I said, I was to drive the colonel. He said, right, you can be my chauffeur. I'm the JAG. And I said, what is the JAG? He said, the Judge Advocate General. He said, we're going to First Corps. So he got in and put through my stuff with in the back, and he took another lad with him, and we drove out of there. Do you know, he was a gentleman. We got to this chateau, which the Germans had occupied, and they hadn't really finished checking it over, because we walked into this room, which was set out, you know, for the chairs all round a big table, and up on the wall was a portrait of Hitler, and somebody said, oh, I'll have that. And one of them says, don't touch anything. We don't know. We haven't checked it yet, whether it's booby-trapped or not. Anyhow, we left that, and we got into this chateau. And he himself introduced us to the major, the captain. And he had two outriders. He had a batman. And the others had batman. And that's about all. There was a couple of shorthand writers he had. And he said, you can get yourselves sorted out round this area. We had a part of the area of the estate, and there was trenches already dug there. Jerry had done a wonderful job of putting these trenches and that in, and we used those. And they told us, that these shorthand writers, what they was doing. He said, you'll be going to all the trials and whatnot. And again, there was nothing to do. You know, we just waited. And eventually, when we pushed on a bit, I said to somebody, I said, do you know where 50 Div is? So somebody says, oh, it isn't far away. It's just up there. So I asked him. They called him Clark, this fella. And he was a nice fella. I said, is there any possibility of me running over and seeing my old unit up there? So he said, well, I ain't doing anything. He said, take one of the small cars. And he said, you can stay the night. And I drove over and I found them. And, we had quite a night, and we they were all dug in, and somebody said, oh, you can share mine. And what they'd also done, which we'd never done before, over the entrance, they'd put a steel plate. And it's a good job they did, because we got shelled that night. And the one next to us, it got hit on the steel plate, and it protected everybody. So I stayed with them the night, and then I went back. And we started moving forward, and we went up through Belgium to Turnhout. And from Turnhout we went to Breda. And then, you know, when the, that Market Garden was on the
Arnhem
drop, we were up that way. And we could see them in the distance, and we had the guards division around us, and they'd put toilets and that in. I walked into this toilet one day, and there was a brigadier in there, and two or three of us, and he was chatting to us, and somebody said to him, what's holding us up then? So he said, 200 German tanks, if you want to know, between us and them. And he said, we've got to clear them out first. And eventually they did. And we crossed over into Germany, and we finished up in a village, and they turned everybody out of the village, and we had a house and whatnot. And this went on like this until eventually the war fizzled out. And we sort of got busy then, and the first one we went to, we had to go to this trial at... we were in Iserlohn then. In the barracks at Iserlohn, and the colonel, he slept in C-mess, and I had a bunk in C-mess if I wanted, and in case he sent for me one day and I had to take him out and finish late, he always looked after us. And one day I'm cleaning the car outside, and the camp commandant comes round, and he said, what are you doing? I said, I'm cleaning the colonel's car. He says, you don't clean the car. I said, well, nobody else is going to do it. He said, oh, yes, they are. And he got the colonel and he said, I've just allocated two Germans to your driver. And from then on, my car was cleaned every day, very thoroughly, and checked over by two German mechanics. And they were very good. Give them a cigarette and they would work all day long. While we were there in Iserlohn, we got instructions that on no account had we to walk off the pavement if there were women or children in front of us. They had to walk off. I couldn't do that. Because they're not bad people, aren't the Germans, when you get to know them. Anyhow, we carried on, and we started going to trials. And the first one we went to was a small hospital that had been for these prisoners who'd been used for, manufacturing and whatnot, the women who'd been brought with them. And this was a woman's hospital, and they'd been working without pay, I presume, for the Germans. And they were up for murder. There was 90 graves in the graveyard there. We went round to have a look at them, because I was quizzy. This is my first trial I'd been on. And it finished up that they got found guilty. The SS man in charge was sentenced to death. The doctor got 10 years, and the matron got 10 years. And I thought, I'm not going into any more of these. And when I was driving him back, he said, you weren't very happy with that, were you? So I said, no. I said, I couldn't have done that. I couldn't have sentenced somebody to death. He said, but you could have killed somebody if you'd been out fighting. I said, that's different. But I said, I couldn't stand there and sentence somebody to death. 10 years? Yes, I could have done that. So I said, oh, but the evidence was there. He said, 90 children were dead there. And we then went to a big...
Who were the victims then?
There were Poles and, you know, all from the taken from these eastern countries. Then we had to go to a trial. Now, where was it? Well, it was north of Berlin, and it was about 400 miles from where we were. And when I got there, he'd gone with his riders this time because he can get a move on the motorways and whatnot. And when we got there, he said, I'm sorry. He said, you're going to have to go back. I said, what for? He said, we should have brought 3 nurses with us. Oh, I said, no. He said, look, as long as you're back for 2 o'clock tomorrow, that will do. So I had to turn round, drive the 400 mile back, find these nurses, tell them we were leaving at 6 the next morning, and whip them back there. And when I got there, he said to me, I don't want to see you for 4 days. He said, if you go into my room, he said, you'll find half a bottle of whiskey if you want a drink. Just take it. But he said, you're not doing anything for 4 days. You can go to bed if you want. So it was like that. And when I left, he gave me a cheque. And he said, now, if you want any help, he said, there's my card. And they called him Clark. And I saw him in the paper once after that, where he was going into a prison somewhere. But he'll be way past it now. So I stayed with them until the war ended.
So you were happy working with this JAG?
Oh, yes. It was a very good job. I mean, we were basically stationed in the barracks at Iserlohn, and all I had to do was to take him where he wanted to go. And he wasn't the sort of person that went out for the sake of it. You know, if he could get a lift with somebody, he would go. But no, I took him to his trials and what things like that.
Any other memories of the trials themselves?
Not really. I did see one before where it was, I think it was a theft. Somebody had been pinching stuff from army camps and that. And, you know, it's the sort of thing that a magistrate would have dealt with here. And no, I lost interest when I said this fellow sentenced to death. I just lost interest in it. And, I didn't mind the others. But
how did the man receive his sentence of death?
Nothing, just blank. Just blank. Because they weren't in uniform, you know. They were in their plain suits. I felt sorry for the matron. I mean, they let her sit on the chair while she was giving her evidence, but poor soul, I mean, she'd be in her 50s then. And like everybody else there, I presume she was taking orders.
In your job in the field ambulance, yeah, how much medical knowledge did you have to have?
None. It wasn't my job looking after those. My job was driving them. And I didn't drive ambulances. We only had so many ambulances, and then we had transport. Now, what we did have, we had a colonel, a new colonel in the desert called Johnson. He was a regular. Now, he knew his job. He had a caravan, which he used to tow, and he developed these side curtains at either side of it, dropped down, and he had 2 rooms then, one at each side. He had all his 3 tunners done like that and turned into hospital wards, if you like to call it that. He had his operating theatres like that, all off these 3 tunners. Now, they could all be folded up and you could be motoring in less than half an hour. Excellent idea, that. They could be repaired. They only needed sewing up or patching or things like that. I wanted one on my 1500 weight. They wouldn't give me one.
And that organization was due to that one man?
I think so. Yeah. Oh, it was quite go ahead.
And how do you feel now about having served in the RASC field ambulance in the Second World War?
How do you mean, how do I feel?
Do you feel happy about the job that you did?
Or? Oh, yeah. Yes. We were with some very good people. I mean, we had the DLI with us. Who, you know, if you want somebody to fight with, get the DLI or get the Indians. You know, they're wonderful people when they're fighting.
Why were the DLI so good?
Oh, they were little terrors. They did exactly as they were told. A second lieutenant in the DLI would only last about 6 weeks. Yeah.
Why was that?
He got killed. You know, they did what they were told. They were the Jerry had a lot of respect for those. Yeah.
So you mean you admired them for their courage?
Oh yes. Yeah. And the Indians.
Did you have any lasting effects from serving in the war?
No. Just short of money. I didn't get overpaid, and I got very little when I came out.
And did that cure your pile problem?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
And did you have pneumonia again?
Nope. No. In fact, since then, I've had a pneumonia jab, which stops you getting it again. Yeah.
When were you demobbed?
46. We went to York. I was demobbed at York. In fact,